This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And this is The Deep Dive, as usual, on Friday mornings and Sunday in repeat, hosted by Brooke Spector. And today's guest, we're going to do something we don't usually, once in a while we talk about food and things like that. I mean, we all have to eat, we all have to enjoy food, part of our lives. Guest today, interesting guy, two very different parts of the cultural universe, shall we say, Harry Sideropoulos. Many of you know Harry by reputation or by attending one of his big band bashes over the years, and he conducts this big sort of old-style big band sound. But there's the other side to Harry, which is the gourmand side, the foodie, the man who loves to cook, to eat, to entertain, to talk, and to demonstrate about food. And he apparently has a book coming out. It's not available just yet, and I'll let Harry talk about that. But it is food and stories and reminiscences and recollections and observations. And Harry, welcome. I'm glad you could join us.
Hey, it's good to be back on Chai, and it's lovely to see you again. I haven't seen you for quite some time, so it's lovely. Thank you for the invitation.
It's our pleasure. It's our privilege. When I think of food and entertaining and this kind of thing, my mind inevitably goes to a television show that was done many years ago in the United States on the public television network, Julia Child. The doyen of television food programs, really. I mean, she was the one who made food a subject for television, the preparation and the enjoyment of it. And one episode stays in my mind from, I don't know, 50, 60 years ago, I guess. She was doing some sort of French-style roast chicken in a casserole, and she was busy splashing wine into it. And next to the casserole dish, there was a glass. And so she poured wine into the glass. And on television, in violation of every rule there was in American television, she drank the whole glass of wine and said, "The wine's good. It's good for drinking. It's good for cooking." I have no idea whether lawyers got involved afterwards, but it stays in my mind as someone who was uncontrollable but fanatic about food, as you are.
Yeah. I love Julia Child, and I grew up watching Floyd on France, Floyd on Italy, Floyd on Spain, and he too drank. The thing about food for me is it landed up. I mean, I've always loved cooking. I love entertaining. Food is my love language. If I cook food for you and you don't eat a second plate or a third plate, it's like you're rejecting my love. It's all that stuff. But the way it started professionally, and I need to start by saying, by no means am I a caterer. I don't cater. But what I do is I do these wonderful experiences, both for the private sector and for the corporate sector, where it's called the bespoke luxury boutique dining. And the latest one is called Eat, Play, Love. And the whole idea behind it is it's stories. So it's an evening or an afternoon of storytelling and food, and it's all home-cooked food. So although it's presented really beautifully and lusciously and a kind of it's kind of sexy, but it's all home cooked food, which you don't get in restaurants, because in restaurants everything either has to be grilled or fried. So how this started was many years ago. I was asked by a friend of mine to host a luncheon for her book club, and she says, "I don't have the space in my home, nor do I have the inclination to cook." And I said, "Sure, come over." And she said, "Can we just do the food that I love?" So it was spinach pie and pastizio and moussaka, and it was lamb with roast potatoes and tzatziki and dips and all of that. And it was about 12 ladies. And I need to say that none of them, at no point in the afternoon, did they discuss the book. At no point, okay. But apparently they had all read the book. Anyway, so we did the afternoon, we did the launch, the lunch, and it was wonderful, fun. You know, like that lovely Afrikaans word, keiering. It was that. There was a lot of catering. We sat and the food came on. We were talking and laughing, and I was telling them stories. Anyway, the next day I received a phone call from one of the guests, and she said, "Hi, Harry, I just want to thank you. We had the most wonderful afternoon. And I was wondering, would you be prepared to host a very similar dinner at a venue for some of my executive board at NetBank? And I went, what do you mean? She said, well, exactly what you did yesterday. And I said, well, I didn't do anything. I just brought out the food in huge Pyrex dishes. And I just talked, you know, I talked rubbish. She goes, yes, that's exactly what we want. And from that is how it all started. And what became one event, after that event, I was booked for another 3 events from that event. And something that happened so organically and something that gave me so much joy. And that's how it all started, okay? That is how it all started. And now 15 years later, I don't know how many thousands of people have sat at my table. And these are tables where we go into venues around the country and we take over the kitchen and we work with the staff in the kitchen and we recreate my recipes. But what I love about it, it's not just about the recipes. It's about the ambiance. It's about the music that I've curated for starter, main, and dessert. It's the what the table looks like. It's got pictures and photo frames, and it's got wonderful little things from my youth. It really is an immersive experience. And of course, from that, one, you know, for so many years, people were saying, oh, Harry, you've got to put a cookbook together. You've got to put a cookbook together. And of course, putting a cookbook is not easy and it's expensive. And I also was not prepared to have a cookbook that, I mean, no offense at all, please, no offense to some of the cookbooks that are on sale at Woolies. But I kind of didn't want a cookbook that was just a picture, a beautifully styled picture and the recipe. A beautifully styled picture and the recipe. I didn't want that because that's not interesting. So by how did this come about? I was booked for a corporate event to do one of my food experiences for 187 guests for the spa group, the head office. And when we went together for the briefing, she said to me, Harry, can we please gift all the guests, each couple, your cookbook? And I said, I don't have a cookbook. She says, well, why don't we quickly make one? And I said, what do you mean, why don't we quickly make one? And she said, well, can't we do one with like 25 recipes? So they gave me budget. We shot those 25 recipes. It had a little bit of storytelling, nothing huge. And that was the first version of the book. And she, Nell Marie Pullman was her name, introduced me to the photographer, Pierre Besson, and his wife, Natalia Besson, who is does all the beautiful editing on the pictures. And when the opportunity came for a cookbook from the ESI Press at the University of Pretoria, where they saw that little bonsai book of 25 recipes, they said, we would love to publish your book, but we want to do it your way. We want the recipes. We want the stories. We want the anecdotes. We want mythology. We want all the things that are Harry Sideropoulos. So this book started two years ago. That's how long it's taken. Nearly 400 pages. It's called Every Taste a Memory. It has recipes. By the way, we start with dessert because dessert, why? I'm tired of starting with salads. Why must I start my book with salads? So I'm starting it with desserts because it's my book and because I can. And my mother loved desserts as well. It's a book that pays homage, tribute to my mom and my dad and my culture. And in there are all the things that resonate with me. There's poetry. There is mythology.
I must break on this point. We'll come right back to it, but we have to do an ad break. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest today, Harry Sideropoulos. And we are talking food, glorious food, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host, of course, and my guest today, Harry Sideropoulos. We're talking about a cookbook that isn't a cookbook. It's a book of memories and associations and tales about food. I've noticed a trend among cookbook writers, in fact, in which that is becoming the model, that it isn't simply, oh, that looks lovely. I've got to have that. I've got to make that. I don't have any of the ingredients, but I'll take care of it. To one in which the recipe is interwoven with the idea of why you should have that recipe as part of your repertoire, or why you should enjoy it. I have one from a well-known Chinese restaurant, for example, the owner and operator, which talks about her childhood and everything else. In the middle of it, there are recipes. It's a real trend line for me.
I think it's also because, I'll tell you what's interesting out of statistics, people that buy recipe books don't necessarily cook the recipes, which is, it's quite, but they love paging through recipe books and they love it as a coffee table book. So I think that's why it's kind of evolved as something that you can dip into. when you feel when the need arises. I've had many dinners at friends' homes or at my home where we've pulled out wonderful books, whether it's coffee table books, and I love architecture and design, so there's books on architecture and design, there's books on cooking. You know, after the main meal, we're sitting and we're paging through, and so I think that's why the trend has gone that way. I think also we've evolved with so many things. But what's quite exciting about this particular book is that I also wanted, because I'm a storyteller and I love telling stories, I've written some original work in there that all has food as a theme. Some are true stories that are very moving. Others are funny stories. Others are legend myths about certain dishes. And all of that stuff I have recorded on QR. So I've recorded it in the studio with music, narration, sound effects. And people in the book will be able to press the QR code and take them through to the storytelling, which is basically a podcast. Think of it as a podcast, but no visual. Because I love radio and my background, I started in entertainment in radio. I still love the idea of imagination. That for me, with so many radio stations like now, where, you know, we see each other talking, and that's wonderful because people want to see. No one knew what we were doing in the studio in the Rude Awakening because there were no cameras there. I still love the idea of put it on, put your headphones on, or just have it, you know, with your speakers, and let the music and the voice do everything. Because we are in a world at the moment where there's just a barrage of noise, and you constantly there's videos and more videos and more videos and more content. I just wanted you to listen, and together with that, I've also curated a magnificent playlist of the music that I grew up with music that resonates from Greek music to big band swing music to European music, French music, Charles Aznavour, Mireille Mathieu, contemporary French music, Italian, Spanish, Mexican, dance music. All of that is in the book. So it really is a book that is signed by Harry Sideropoulos in every way. It's all the things that bring me joy, and not only family, but family along the way that have become my family.
I'm going to take you back to something you said right at the beginning. When you prepare food for people to enjoy, if they don't ask for a second or even a third helping, you somehow feel hurt. Let me tell you a story myself. My first international assignment was living in Indonesia, and one of my staff members very generously invited me to his home for dinner, prepared by his spouse with a couple of guests. And Indonesians very rarely do that to foreigners, let alone the boss. And the food was, in a word, wonderful. It was tastes I didn't know and seasonings I was unfamiliar with. And it was all extraordinary. And I finished every last rice grain on my plate. And my host and hostess were appalled. They were horrified, because to them, that was the signal that they hadn't heaped up enough food on my plate in the first place. And so they then put a second portion, which was just as gargantuan, on my plate. And now I'm struggling to finish the second portion. And I was afraid that we were going to end up with thirds, and they were afraid I was going to finish everything again. We'd have this dance until we were all in trouble. But your response is people need to eat a second helping, or it's a symbol that it was okay. It was food, but it wasn't something tremendous, wonderful. These are different cultural constructs, obviously.
I think, food, certainly for Southern Mediterraneans, and I say that because it's part of our language. I don't think, no offense to Norwegians and the Finns, and I adore both countries, but I don't think they have the kind of obscure relationship and complex relationship that Southern Mediterraneans have with food. But bearing in mind that my parents and so many of that generation came from a world of war, it was the Second World War, and food was scarcity. After Second World War, whilst the rest of the world was trying to recover from that war, Greece went into Greek civil for 8 to 9 years. And that was brother against brother. And then the scarcity of food, compounded with World War II, became something that you didn't just say, oh, I'm not in a mood for this today. You ate what was there. And I remember my late mom, till the very end, when we would go to a restaurant, I'd say to her, Ma, what do you want? And she'd go, whatever's the cheapest. Okay. Because for her, food. They never had the money for food. My father, who was about 15, 16 years older than my mom during the war, I mean, he was a soldier in World War II, but, you know, there were times where both him and his brother would have to alternate leather shoes in the winter so that the one could go and work in leather shoes to get him through, and then they would swap over. So I think that concept of no food and now being able to have it, and the abundance of the generosity of the heart, is, I think, what makes us who we are. And other people, you know, we're living in a country like South Africa where, you know, I will arrive at someone's home, and for them, they're equivalent to food. What do you want to drink? Okay. And there's just so much alcohol. Okay. Now, I'm not a drinker. So for me, I've always laughed with all my non-Greek friends. I said to them, you know, that from the minute I arrive, the minute I eat, you've got about 17 minutes. Okay. We do the niceties. We chat. This is not the time to discuss Trump's foreign policy. We do the niceties. And then I want noises coming out of the kitchen. I want foil being ripped off Pyrex dishes. I want the sound that things are happening. In a Greek home, before we eat, okay? And food is where everything happens, around the table. Nowadays, so many people don't sit around a table. Interesting, the Jewish community do on Shabbat, okay, weekly, which is a beautiful thing. But besides that, a lot of people just grab plates and eat at home. I mean, in their bedroom or in front of the TV. Every night we ate around the table. And those tables that were covered, because God forbid in a Greek home, you damage the expensive table. And everything was covered in plastic. Everything. With those aubergines or with the pineapple plastic or the apples and the bananas. And we sat around the table and we spoke. So that's why I think the love of food for us is love, and it's our love language. I had a dear friend of mine who was going through a very difficult phase, certain personal issues, family, health, and they were at the hospital all week and all night and day. My initial thing was, I'm not here to sort out collecting the kids and blah, blah, blah. You've got an infrastructure for that. I'm going to make sure that your parents and you have got food for the week. Okay. And I went into, you know, I went into complete war zone. Let's get them fed. Okay. Because that is, it's a love language. When a friend of mine gave birth, I planned food for the first 2 weeks in little containers. They've got their first child. They don't even know what's hit them. Let them not worry about food. This, of course, was a time before Uber Eats. But there's only so much Uber Eats that one can eat. So for me, food is a love language.
When you prepare repasts, I'm desperately trying to avoid saying when you cook for people.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, there is a divide in among people. Do you serve food that is plated, or do you serve casserole dishes in the center of the table with a fork and a spoon and say, go at it, folks?
My preference is what they call family style, which is all on the table. Now, there's times for most of my dining experiences, usually, especially if there's more than 10, 20 people around the table, I do plate the main meal. But desserts and starters are never plated. And the whole thing, and of course, breads and dips. And what I love about what I do when I cook, both privately and when I cook for events, which never happens in eventing, I can tell you, is people go home with food. We make enough food. I mean, it's a premium event, okay? I mean, so food, as you know, the cost of food has gone up. But I don't ever want somebody to have three potatoes, okay? So there's a lot, and people go home. So if I'm going to make a spinach pie for starters, and there's 20 people at the table, my various platters of spinach pie will feed 30, 35 people. And then I go, may the best man win. Here is the foil. Take it here, the spatulas. Take it home with you. And I love that because you don't get that, okay? I mean, you get it in a restaurant, the leftovers. But here, you're getting a full portion to take home with you. So I don't like plated. I find plated, plated is just not my thing. And then I'm also tired of this world of smears on plates and foam and little droplets. And everyone is so, you know, with social media, everyone talks about, you know, Michelin star restaurants. And of course, there's a place for it. Of course, there is. It's just not my thing. I wanted to create home-cooked food that is Mediterranean, reinvent some of it, reimagine some of it. But I don't want smears where we sit in plating with tweezers. It's not my thing. And when I arrive and I and I see that with a little leaf and a little, it's like, it's not my thing. And then you pay an arm and a leg for that. It's just not my thing. And that's why when you go to Greece, those restaurants certainly exist. But where everybody eats every night, is it a taverna? Because every little hood has a taverna.
You're obviously, 10, actually. You're obviously not a fan of edible flowers. Although after no, this,
I love them. I love edible flowers. I put them in my Garden of Eden salad. So my aesthetic is huge. So when I do the pies and the sesame seeds, I create patterns and I plait. No, the aesthetics are huge, but my salad isn't butter lettuce, iceberg lettuce. I'll use baby greens and I'll use pomegranates and I'll use macerated pears or macerated apples. So I try and reinvent, for me, salad is not food. When I see a salad arriving at my table, I get excited because I know that my main meal's on its way. That's what salad is, okay?
I must tell you, after we conclude recording this, I'm going to rush to my kitchen. But we have to take another ad break, and we'll be back in just a minute. I'm speaking with Harry Sideropoulos, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host at The Deep Dive, and we'll be back in just a minute.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as usual. And my guest today, a man who is making me famished, Harry Sideropoulos. He's causing me to regret the fact that I'm at least 10 meters from my kitchen as we record this. And there's nothing in front of me but my laptop. We were talking about edible flowers, and I once ate in a very, very fancy, very, very nouvelle cuisine restaurant in Japan, which was the ultra in minimalist nouvelle cuisine French cooking. And each plate came to you, it was more extraordinary looking than the previous one. But there was only one problem with it. There wasn't enough food for me to be filled. And
this is it.
To the horror of the restaurant owners and waiters, I looked at the table setting, which was beautiful. It looked like a wonderful salad table setting. And I started to consume the edible flowers.
Yes. Yes.
I'm desperate.
Yes. I've eaten garnish. I've eaten the garnish because I'm hungry. There was a very well-known restaurant. It's now closed, called Mosaic in Pretoria, the Pretoria Centurion. I can't remember. It was magnificent. When I say flavors, it was an amazing Afrikaans lady that's now immigrated. I don't know where she is, but it was some of the finest food, finest, delicious food that I've had in South Africa. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was, I could taste the, it sounds pretentious, but all the different layers of taste on my palate. It was astounding. But the bread arrived, okay? And they had literally, there were eight of us at the table. The bread arrived. And those, Woolies sells these lovely, they sell them two in a packet. There's it's rolls with sesame seeds. It's brown rolls, okay? That's basically the size. So think of a computer mouse times two. That's basically how it was. And it was thinly sliced for a table of eight. And I go, really? And I left from there hungry. But I tell you what is interesting. When we sit around with my ethnic friends or all those friends who are not ethnic but love food, we are the minority because there's a lot of people that, food is merely there a little bit for taste, but just for sustenance. I've got friends that literally eat beans and chicken, like a chicken schnitzel from Pick and Pay or Woolies and rice, and they're very happy with it. So it's just, but for me, when I arrive at a braai and I arrive at 12 and we are eating at 3:30, 4, because everyone is too busy drinking, I can't bear it. It is my absolute, I guess also because I'm not a drinker. So for me, sitting around and watching people progressively get more and more drunk is just not my thing. But you will never see in Greece, people don't drink unless they're in a bar. They will drink in a small glass the wine with their food. And that's how I was brought up. So there was never, my parents never said, oh, you cannot have wine. There was always wine on the table. I mean, as a kid, they'd give us a little droplets to say that we were. So alcohol was not something that we weren't allowed to have. So we grew up with alcohol and food, but food was the most important thing. You never ate on an empty stomach. So it's interesting, the cultural differences, because when I was many, many years ago, when I was in Prague, and again, a city with magnificent food, especially desserts. They really do specialize in desserts. But I was just so, they're not food people, on a whole. Food is sustenance and taste, of course. But that's what it is. For us, It's a buffet. Like a Sunday lunch is a buffet. This thing of arriving with one Pyrex dish, no way. It's a buffet. You got to have at least 3-4 pies. You got to have dips. You got to have meatballs. You got to have patties. You've got to have melanzane. You got to have pasticcio. You got to have moussaka. You got to have the lamb. You got to have beef options. You got to have chicken and a lemon with oregano and rosemary. That is like an average Sunday lunch, okay? Because that's how we are. That's how we roll. And my last thing is, I was once interviewed by a very famous journalist in the early stages of my career. And they said to me, what is the thing that you fear most in life? And I think they were expecting some sort of a profound statement. And I went, what I fear is that if there is such a thing as reincarnation, I come back to the world as someone who has no love and appreciation for amazing food. And I literally am happy with Rice Krispies for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a little bit of Boerewors roll. That is my biggest fear. That's it. I don't want to come back as someone who enjoys only salad.
For many years now, the American holiday of Thanksgiving, which is not a South African tradition,
yes.
And so I like Thanksgiving, which is a turkey and all the associated dishes that go with it. Now, South Africans eat turkey Christmas, and they complain that it's dry. It's like sandpaper with chicken flavoring most of the time. I make it differently, and people fight to come to our house for Thanksgiving. And usually yes. you serve the meal at around 2:30, 3 o'clock, which gives you adequate yes. time to get a nap in afterwards. And I start at about 5 in the morning. And for years, I did everything from scratch. Well, I didn't kill the turkey, but we had to do the whole bit and the stuffings and the gravies and the vegetables and the starters and the sauces yes. and the relishes and the pumpkin pie, which sometimes becomes a pumpkin tartlet because I can't quite find graham crackers to my taste. Anyway, a couple of years back, I started at my customary 5 o'clock in the afternoon, made everything, put it all out, said, excuse me, I'll be back in a minute. And I promptly fell asleep in the bedroom. I was awakened an hour and a half later. My people worried that I was, whether or not I was sick. I said, no, I'm just tired. I've been cooking yes. since before sunrise.
That's how you do it.
And
I've got this other thing that I enjoy. So I move after a dinner party. It's a dinner party, not a lunch, a dinner. It has to happen. After a wonderful dinner party, yes, I'll move the dishes in, but I kind of don't clean up the table. I've got a beautiful wooden table, all right? Because I like waking up in the morning and kind of looking at, you know, what was the night before and how joyous it was. And then the ritual of cleaning up is also part of the whole thing. And it's not something that I quickly shove in the washing machine. I don't have a dishwasher, so I wash everything by hand. And I love that because it's such a, I love, you know, where there's breadcrumbs on the table and there's all the leftovers from the night before and the glasses of wine and what have you. And then the next morning, I just look at it with such glee. And then I slowly start collecting. So for me, dining around the table and sharing all those stories, because there's always funny stories. And I've been very blessed to have a really beautiful circle of friends that have become family. And this book is a tribute to them too, with the things that they love most that I cook, or certain things that their mother does that I'm obsessed with. Okay. Everything, all of the things I love are in the book.
I have to ask you, we didn't bother to do this. We've talked about the book and the ways in which it can be used. We didn't give it a name and how people get a hold of it. I think that's kind of important.
Okay, so the book is called Every Taste a Memory. It will be available in February of next year. We were hoping to make it for Christmas. But what's happened is the book from 280 pages went to 300 pages to 340 pages. And now we're sitting at 400 pages. But what's happened is the binding process takes a little bit longer because it's a much thicker book and that needs time. And we can certainly get a couple of copies out, a couple of hundred copies, but we cannot get the big numbers out before Christmas. So it will be ready for next year once I return back from Canada and from the US. And for people to follow me online, if they follow me on social media, on Harry Sideropoulos, either on Facebook or on Instagram, they can follow me and all that stuff will be there. Or alternatively, they can email me on harry@harrysid, that's S-I-D, harrysid.co.za. They'll send me an email and I will put their email on our book database that we've been collecting over the last year. And then once the book is ready for pre-ordering, a link will be sent. They click on it. And it's all done online. There's nothing. This book is not. You cannot go to Exclusive Books to buy it. It just didn't. You know, the minute you go through a publishing house, they are very specific as to what they want. And that's not what I wanted. So working with ESI Press, and with Heather, who heads up the humanities department. They gave me such an open blank canvas and the most amazing team to put it together with, and amazing photographer. And we shot in Greece as well. So we shot all the studio pictures here, and then we shot pictures in Greece, in Athens. When I was there last year for three months, I was working in Europe. And then the rest of the time I would stay in Athens in our apartment. And we shot there. So there's all my favorite spots in Greece. And there are certain images that are food that's in my recipe book, but the pictures are for my favorite taverna. We did a photo shoot outside the Herod Atticus Amphitheater, downtown Athens. I'm a downtown Athens boy. Don't give me little Athenian Riviera where I could be anywhere in the world. It does not interest me in the slightest. I love the grit of downtown Athens. So that's all in the book. And we got a local photographer. So the best is either on social media or email me on harry@harrysit.co.za, and we'll be able to then put them on the database.
We're speaking with Harry Sideropoulos, not Harry Sid, Harry Sideropoulos. And this is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. We'll be back after these messages. Don't, as we used to say in radio 100 million years ago, don't touch that dial.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we are having a wonderfully entertaining and hunger-producing conversation with Harry Sideropoulos, author, connoisseur of food, and the art of eating, the art of entertaining, I guess. To say he cooks is kind of an understatement, I think. Prepares a repast. But there's the other side to you, which we haven't really talked about at all, which is music.
Yes.
And you made your name really initially with the larger universe besides, hey, that's a man who eats, with music. Are you still doing concerts, or do you have any plans?
Yes. I mean, we did. It was a full circle. Last year, I was approached by Adam Howard, who's literally one of South Africa's most prolific trumpeters and musical directors, who started the Johannesburg Big Band. And we launched it with a series of concerts at Monte Cassino's Teatro, which was called Swinging Las Vegas. And then it came back for a Christmas season at the Big Top Arena last year with 5,000 people. And then this year again, back at the Teatro with Big Band Swing, with the second installment of Swing in Las Vegas. So I absolutely love it. It's part of what I do. I'm getting ready now for two new shows that will be launched next year. One is my new comedy, which is comedy and food, where I'm cooking and talking because I have a lot to say. And the other one is my new music experience. I'm currently working on some beautiful tango music as well, because it's something I absolutely love. So, you know, what I love about what I do is that, you know, people say to me, would you want to go back into radio? And I went, no, because I'll be too tied down. I love the fact that on some days I'm in a studio. I love the fact that in some days I'm singing, other days I'm cooking, other days I'm doing storytelling, other days I'm writing. I love the diversity of it. And what I've started to do, obviously, with these eating dining experiences is weaving music and song and storytelling all together. So even with my music, there's always storytelling. Okay. But I love that genre. It brings me great joy. I love singing it, but I love singing it my way. And that's the part that I like. I don't try and mimic anyone. It's me. I have a certain voice. I deliver it in a certain way. And there's playfulness. In everything I do, there's always playfulness. And that gives me joy. Because the older I get, I've just turned 51. I feel that my life... I'm young. No, I am. Especially now that I've shaved, I feel a lot younger. But the older I get, the more life isn't so much about me and being so self-obsessed, but rather what I can kind of do for others. And the joy that I get seeing people happy when they eat my food, when they're in my audience, when they interact with me in a shopping center. Look, don't get me wrong. I'm not Lady Gaga. I don't have 9 million people that are harassing me on every corner of my life. But I love interacting with the people that enjoy my work. I love having a chat in the Woolies section with the desserts, where I had a Jewish mama tell me, oh, Harry, this is stunning. I love this. I don't know what to do. I love Willie's desserts. I love that interaction. And I love how I make people feel. And And that stems from a place of joy and a place of being happy with who I am and where I'm at in my life. So I love sharing those experiences, and I love making people happy. And I don't mean it in a I'm very, very good at putting boundaries up when it comes to personal relationships. Like, it's not about, you know, it's I just want to keep you happy. But when it comes to my work, I love it. I love the fact that I'm going to Woolies, and because I obviously buy a lot of my greens from Woolies and for my gigs. And I love it when Patricia sees me in one of the aisles and she goes, "Harry, we've got a new series of letters. Have you seen it?" And I go, "No, I haven't." She says, "Let me take you to it." I love that. I love how we talk about food and how we talk about her kids and my godchildren. I enjoy interacting with people. Other people can't bear it. I love what I do. When I do my corporate shows and I'm emceeing and I'm doing awards and comedy, I don't just deliver stuff. I love interacting with the audience. A, it's where I get my material. I don't speak at them. I speak to them. And I love connecting. And like, for me, connecting is the biggest joy. 3 months in Greece last year and throughout the Mediterranean and the Adriatic, I met some of the most fascinating people, because we just exchanged something about either an ice cream or about a view that we were looking at. So I like filling my life with those experiences, and I love meeting new people. I know that many people, the older they get, they don't want to meet new people. I've got my inner circle of trusted friends that have been with me for decades, whom I love, but there's always space for an interesting, fascinating human being. And I've proven it. I mean, in the last 2 years, I've met somebody who has become such an important part of my life. It kind of happened accidentally. There's always space for love, and there's always space for beautiful human beings, because God knows we need them in this world right now.
Harry, you have to spend some time in East Asia and Southeast Asia, where the food cultures are almost what you have been describing. The preparation is everything. The eating is also everything. And the way in which you respect and appreciate and admire the preparer is also everything.
Yeah.
And I hesitate to do this. I'm sorry. I know you have other appointments you have to get on to. But it has been a wonderful moment to talk with somebody who is that happy to be doing the things that they love.
Thank you. Look, it's taken a lot of work. All right. It doesn't. I'm not Pollyanna. It's taken a lot of work. I think after COVID and the loss of my mom, who was the most single important person in my life, I couldn't lift my head. I couldn't. It took me 4 years to lift my head. I was working very little because I didn't want to work. I couldn't sing. I stopped listening to music. I stopped singing, and I stopped doing comedy. And then Adam Howard gave me this opportunity to perform. And I knew that if I didn't take it, I wouldn't perform again. So I saw a lot of darkness from COVID to about a year and a half ago. And coming out of that, you realize how fortunate you are.
We have been speaking with the irrepressible, the inimitable, and I suspect, although the word is used far too often, the uniquely talented Harry Sideropoulos, master of cuisine, master of entertaining, and musician. And it has been a great joy and a pleasure. And as soon as we finish this recording, I'm rushing to the kitchen to get something to eat because of the way this conversation has gone. Harry, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Always a joy to be on this on Chai. Always supports my work and, of course, your community. And you, thank you very, very much. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. You take care. Have a good rest of your week.
Cheers. And bye.
Brooke Spector and the Deep Dive, and we will be back next week with another guest in another field, another discipline, another topic. But if you listen today, Friday morning at 9, and you want to hear this program all over again at 10 on Sunday, or if your friends missed it, tell them to tune in Sunday morning at 10 on High FM. Have a good weekend. Be safe. We'll talk to you again next week.